Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Hey Kids Comics. If I sound tired, it's because we've all been running through Alan Moore's brain for the past 4 weeks now, I think. 4 weeks. I'm Andrew Farmer, your host. As always, with me is the Jedi Cole, my co-host, producer, and hetero life mate. Are you out there?
I am out there here, both producing and heteroing.
Yeah, just keep working on that, buddy.
I'm trying, man.
And we are blessed to be joined by one of our, I guess we could call him a regular guest at this point. He's as regular as anyone else.
I take my Metamucil.
That's right. That's Hunter.
Yes, to be sure. So, yes, and you got the Metamucil we sent you. Good.
Good, good.
Yes, care yes package. I am Mr. Hunter Deucing. Yes, that's me.
He's been on such shows as shows I can't remember at this point.
Well, certainly his own show, Midnight Movie Cowboys.
Yes, often on his own show. Sometimes he and I record other things together that never get released because they're a pain in the ass to actually edit.
Yeah, where is that?
Shut your mouth and get back in your hole.
Oh, God.
But tonight we're very pleased to bring you the fourth issue in a five-issue story arc on More on More, the Alan Moore magnum opus. I think I'm going to retire after this. What's the title of this?
It's going to be a tough act to follow.
Right. Pervert comics with your girlfriend, like Alan Moore.
Right. What is the title of this one? Do we know? Do we even have one?
Yeah, we do indeed. This is A Vast Wasteland.
Because that's apt. That's apropos.
Yeah, I named it for Alan Moore's appraisal of pretty much all cinema involving his own works.
So we could also subtitle this, I Want to Piss Fire on It, because that's another thing he said about most of the work that's been adapted into film.
I actually some of them. I think he's wrong about some of them, but, you know.
Well, the thing is, you didn't write them, so he
I know,
has,
well, exactly, so he's
like, sort of taking ownership of that sort of thing.
Anytime somebody does something with something you created, it's, you know, going to have problems with it.
Let's talk about that.
To smarten up the series even further, because we had Starman on last time, and we've had Jefferson
waiting Harris in the sky, like to come and meet us. But
that was actually a quote from from Newton N. Minow, who was a chairman of the Federal Communications Commission back. I'm not sure when, like 1940, 50 some odd, was declared that television was a vast wasteland.
I think everything becomes a vast wasteland at some point, doesn't it?
So I think we should call this a vast wasteland, or the unexpected virtue of pissing fire.
The unexpected virtue of pissing fire. let me explain the unexpected virtue of pissing fire. But yes, so while we're here, let's start there. The last issue we had was all about the legend of Alan Moore, the either self-imposed or, you know, outside aggrandized legends that surround the man. And part of the legend of Alan Moore is this idea that he has come to despise and outright vehemently hate Hollywood as sort of as a catch-all, an umbrella for everything. I don't know if I've ever heard, Alan Moore likes a movie. You know, Alan Moore comes out in favor of something.
Have you ever seen the video of him sitting in, like, a movie theater going, Hollywood has never got my ideas. I saw V for Vendetta and I thought it was trash.
Right, but that's the thing. Like, there's three levels of this, and what you said was very true. There's the level that we're at, which we read the books, and even Hunter, who's out as not a huge comic book. I love the fact that I go to Hunter's house. He's like, I don't know why you want me. I'm not a huge comic book fan. He's got like two shelves of collected edition comic books. You asshole! You're such a liar.
Okay, no, but compared to you and Cole, I'm probably not that big of a fan. Like, I read them occasionally, but okay, recently I read a volume of Sin City. I'll read another graphic novel in, 6 months. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you can't do that. That's like saying that I'm not a movie fan because I'm not the movie fan that you are. You know?
Well, okay, no, I am, okay, so I am a fan, but I wouldn't say I'm, like, to the level where, like...
Not a collector, perhaps.
Exactly. Like, I don't go to Free Comic Book Day and, you know...
Well, that's on you, buddy. That you're part of the... symptom of the problem, is what you are.
But I don't like, go and keep up with, like, the Infinity Gauntlet, buying, like, you know, each issue across, like, five
Neither
different...
Neither do we!
I like the fact that he knows what he's talking about, but he doesn't know...
Yeah, right? He's just saying words that he's heard. He's a...
Yeah. I think the kid said something about Infinity
Gauntlet. I don't know. I'm just, yeah, exactly.
I've heard tell of it.
See, that enforces my point, you know?
I also need to, for complete transparency, okay, I need to say that in between the last podcast that was released and this podcast when it's released, I have buried the entirety of that's available of Marin, the TV show. So if I'm affected in any way by that, just be aware of that. Man, I found myself saying man a lot and all right a lot since just infusing myself with Mark Maron. So just prepare yourself for
that
whatever.
Explains so much.
That in combination with the subject matter of tonight's podcast could really lead down a dark road for me. So I'm just
well, it is Alan Moore. So Alan Moore and dark roads are going to be kind of.
But
going hand in hand.
But, you know, for somebody that's not a quote-unquote comic book fan, that Hunter claims he's not.
Okay, I am a fan. I'm not like
it's
fanatic. Okay. Well, anyway, sorry.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mark Maron hosts Woody Allen and Cole moderates.
Well, they better have a dip.
So what I'm saying is he knows what he's talking about.
I do. More so than most people.
So back to my point. There's people like the three of us and the vast listening audience who's read, you know, the great. And if you haven't since the last issue where we told you to screw you, go read it. The vast library of Alan Moore's works. Your stuff like your V for Vendettas, your Killing Jokes, your Swamp Thing stuff. The stuff he did on the Watchmen.
It's the must, the like that's the essential.
Yeah,
and
the one that you should, if you've not read anything ever, you should be
ever. If you're illiterate, start reading with the Watchmen. The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen stuff. You know, you're from hell. We read it and then we see the movies.
Top 10.
Well,
that'll never be a movie. But
yeah, that'll never be a movie, unfortunately. But we'll come back around to that later. But we read them, then we go see the films, and we're happy that they're made, but we pick them apart because that's who we are, and that's what we do. You know, we could have a whole issue, and we have had whole issues of shows on Watchmen the movie versus Watchmen the comic, and I kind of want to revisit that again tonight.
Yeah,
but,
certainly we can practically want to call it the lack of virtue in Dr. Manhattan's enormous penis.
Yeah, his multiple blue wangs, but...
his penis is beautiful.
It is. It's a glorious. I always wanted my penis to have a half life. But
I'll give you that one.
But then there's Alan Moore, right? Who created it and it exists in this vast, this vast, you know, tumultuous, you know, primordial soup that exists in his head, where he's created these giant worlds. Like, I guarantee you Watchmen and Alan Moore's head did not exist in 12 issues of a comic or 2 hours of a movie. It exists in the, you know, in this cyclopean nightmarescape that is 50 years of
Oh, I think it's like this vast volcanic field that belches up stuff and some of it winds up in comics.
So you can't... Yeah. So he looks at this end product. You know, he's an extra step. We're in the middle.
Yeah.
He can see what's in his head versus what they put on a screen, and obviously he doesn't have the professional wherewithal, and neither should he, to divorce himself from that and say, that's obviously not what's in my brain right now for what I saw when the moving pictures are in my head versus what I'm seeing on a screen.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty and the curse of being the genius of Alan Moore.
But also, I can't help but wonder, you know, do living authors... Seeing their, you know, like Grisham or...
Yeah, we said authors, you know. Buddy. Oh, I'm sorry. That was...
do a lot of, like, living authors of novels then, like, you know, did Lee Child decry the Jack Reacher novel, not in the least of which, because...
A lot of
by
fans
comparison
were,
to,
were upset
yeah.
with it because Tom Cruise isn't tall enough.
Yeah, because he was like a tiny, he was like a miniature version.
It was like Billy Barty playing Jack Reacher.
Exactly.
Oh my God, I want to see. Can I see that movie? Can I see that movie, please?
I will call you Mini Jack Reacher.
I want to see Jack Reacher.
Jack can't Reacher.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. God, yes. Damn it, man. Perfect. And that's been our show, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
There you have it.
But yes, no, I think you're right in any sense. I think it drives them a little further mad than they already had to be to do what they do. You know, not to put them in the same caliber, but we've done it before. I think that you've seen the same issues with Frank Miller, but it's gone a different direction. You know, yeah. where he said, okay, you've made Sin City. I got to be a part of it. Now I want to do The Shadow.
The Spirit.
Everybody's like, no, please, God, don't do it. No, I'm doing it.
You know what's funny, though? When authors direct their own... When they're in charge of the creation of their own books to movies, you end up with Stephen King's The Shining on TV.
Or you wind up with, like, Sin City, which is just a shot-for-shot remake of the...
Of course. Well, and that was the whole, like, that was the whole thing Rodriguez wanted to do with it.
Yeah.
Like, Robert Rodriguez was just like, I want to do Sin City, but do it, like, you know, and really, him doing that opened the door for, like, everything Zack Snyder was doing with Frank Miller's work and with, we'll see, with Watchmen and all that, like, taking these images from the comics and bringing them to life.
And I will say this for Sin City, and even Sin City 2, which I actually enjoyed, and not just for Eva Green's fantastic movies.
I enjoyed Sin City 2 as well, and most people hated it, but I mean, I thought it was what I expected it to be.
Right, but thank you for showing that the technology has reached a point where you can literally make a comic book movie, and by that I mean a movie that is a comic book.
Yes.
And make it viable, you know? And that was the cool thing about it was, you know, through casting and through CG and through the giant head of Mickey Rourke, you managed to make a comic book into a movie. And it was awesome. So for having the wherewithal to not be like, well, we want to take the license, but we want to soften it. And we think that, you know, maybe there should be a secretary that gets into hijinks. Like, instead of that, they were like, we're just going to make a damn movie the way it... Yeah, so...
Well,
but,
the thing about it is, in all fairness, some stuff just doesn't translate 100% to the screen. If you took, for example, a couple of years ago, I probably mentioned this before, I read Peter Benchley's Jaws.
Right.
Which is a
like,
piece of shit book.
Holy crap, this is vastly different.
It's a really bad book. I read it when I was like in seventh grade, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. Like, I was like, this
well,
is
coming
not...
as it coming in as a seventh grader, of course it's bad.
I was like, this is not the great movie I love.
That what was it, The Affair? What were
well,
you telling?
Sure, yeah, it's a seventh grader. I'm sure the fact that Hooper had an affair with Brody's wife was a
oh,
bit...
I was like, eat him.
Like more shark, less infidelity, more shark.
Really.
But Benchley would describe in graphic detail like red bumps around someone's crotch, like if they were in a swimsuit, and he would always describe really gross things on the characters that just like made me feel queasy.
Like too much information.
Yeah, like he'd be like, so and so came in, he had red bumps around his Speedo, like where his balls were. I was like, okay, thanks.
A little too much information.
I had that problem with The Beast, with Peter Benchley's The Beast. I know, I'm not kidding. Like, I tried it. This was, like, maybe 5-6 years ago I tried to read it, and he was, like, 2 pages on a buoy, and I'm like, I'm done. I can't do it. Like,
that one was I'd actually read that many, many years before I read Jaws, but what struck me about Beast was, since you didn't get it all the way through, is it read, like, the cinematic version of Jaws.
Right, right.
It's almost like, okay, I think I've been here before.
So speaking of taking work that doesn't translate well and trying to put it on screen, that's Alan Moore's biggest bitch about Hollywood, is stop taking work that shouldn't be, that there's no reason to translate and put it on screen. And you know what? I kind of agree with him.
I do, because not everything needs to be adapted.
Well, I think, you know, then you run into kind of the George R. R. Martin fishing hat syndrome.
Sorry. You know, that was really good.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to get a campaign going where, you know, what was formerly known as the Greek fishing hat, which was probably once known as something else, should now forevermore be known as the George R. R. Martin hat.
Right.
He should supplant the entire fishing fleets of Greek.
Just his sheer presence alone usurps the...
He now owns that hat, quite literally and figuratively. But at any rate, reportedly, after working in Hollywood for many years, Game of Thrones was conceived as being the completely unfilmable story.
Right.
This was like sort of the insulation, the protection from this sort of crap ever happening to my work.
Right.
Because I've already seen what they can do. But unfortunately, for Martin and for pretty much everybody, once you hand that off, it's open season. If somebody wants to make it, there's almost nothing that is unfilmable anymore.
Well, it's like, look at Burroughs' Naked Lunch. I mean, my God.
Two things wrong with the title of that movie.
Too much Steely Dan.
Yeah, speaking of things that were difficult to get through, that I could not get very far into Naked Lunch, the film version, the Cronenberg, because I just like,
well, it's Cronenberg.
What the hell was that?
Good God.
When you get to giant Julian Sands cockroach, like brain-sucking stuff, that part was pretty sweet.
Well, that's Julian Sands. I'll watch anything with Julian Sands in it. Thank God he's on Gotham, or was, now that he's dead.
I'm sorry I missed that.
I saw him at Texas Frightmare the other day.
Did you? Still looking good. God
yeah,
bless him.
Yeah,
God bless,
like,
that warlock.
I was like, there's Julian Sands. He's a handsome fellow.
So what you said out loud. Just
I said that out
by
loud.
By yourself, just standing there.
And then he looked at me and he called me a gay slur. No, I'm kidding.
And then he threw and then you threw an iron weather vane through him.
Yeah.
But no, so like
again.
But I kind of feel like I feel like Watchmen was unfilmable. And I feel like I don't know why. Do we know why? Cole, you would know this better than anyone. Why choose Watchmen to make into a movie?
I think it was possibly because it was that sort of holy grail. This was the impossible goal. This was Everest, you know, and we were going to challenge that. And also, as bad as aspects of Zack Snyder's Watchmen were, relatively speaking,
right,
I was less inclined to go see Paul Greengrass's.
That's true. That's true.
Or Terry. What about Terry Gilliam's version?
I was actually fairly uninclined to see. I was interested though back then, but I don't think I had the capacity to realize at full how badly Gilliam, how much of a Nick Cage Superman that could have been.
And the thing about Gilliam is, he's pretty overrated. Like, he's made some really good movies, but him tackling something like that just sounds terrible.
Yeah, it would have been a bad idea from the outset. And I remember reading
Greengrass. It would just be like shaky cam, like Matt Damon, like flying through the air and like punching Jason Isaacs in the face.
I hadn't thought about the Gilliam version because that was like 25 years ago.
That was a long time ago.
And it was like practically after the ink was dry.
Right.
He was already working on that. And I'd forgotten, I read an excerpt from like in Starlog or Comic Buyer's Guide or something. And I was so put off to it because it was the scene where the Statue of Liberty is under attack.
And then happens.
Here comes Dr. Manhattan and comedian and something like that. And the cops have got the island surrounded, presumably. I don't know, the Port Authority or somebody.
Port Authority.
Who are you going to call in a situation like that? I'm guessing the Port Authority.
Right.
Someone in New York will have to write in and tell me. But the thing about it is that, okay, you know, the cops are there trying to hold down the situation, and all of a sudden, boom! Here comes the owl ship and everything, and then the line was, "God damn, it's the Watchman!" Like, okay,
I'm out.
You have committed the sin that everyone.
And whose version was this?
Gilliam's.
Mm.
Gilliam's included the Watchman. Unfortunately, Snyder's did as well.
But at least
I think it was out of some sort of perceived necessity in that case. But Greengrass's Watchmen becomes an even greater travesty in that he could not abide Silk Spectre simply being. You can't have a woman just go running around kicking ass. That will not fly, apparently, in a Paul Greengrass superhero film. And, you know, here's where I would side with Alan Moore wholeheartedly, is that apparently she had some sort of weird energy slingshot.
Oh, my God.
It was some sort of creation of Dr. Manhattan, something he just sort of wills into existence so she can hurl
Dr. Manhattan's balls at him.
Right.
Apparently, at least she can, like, destroy things Scarlet Witch style and it makes some kind of sense.
His cornucopia of genitalia.
On screen does not. Yeah, but I honestly was never happier for Flooding in Prague than that sounds terrible because it also actually disrupted, rather ironically, production on League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and screw that movie.
Well, if any Alan Moore licensed material should be made into a movie, it should have been League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
That should have been like a TV show.
Well,
I don't know. I think League of Extraordinary Gentlemen should have been League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, not the movie we got.
Right.
Granted, yes. But if anything was filmable, let's just put it that way. If anything Moore did is filmable, well,
you
it's
hadn't
that.
Had that much chock-a-block of public domain since Captain Carrot and his amazing zoo crew in the Oz Wonderland War.
if you want...
Which I
want
to see that on screen.
You need to know about how bad that movie is that it caused Sean Connery and Stephen Norrington to go, screw it, not making movies anymore. they hated working on that movie. They hated that movie so much that they went, you know what? I think I'm okay. I don't think
perhaps
I need to do
this. Time to think about not doing this anymore.
Yes, Sean Connery was like, I'm just going to go with my FU money to my island, and I'm going to punch women and drink booze. And
I'm going to drink women and punch scotch. I mean...
Exactly.
And write long lists of toys. No, I'm sorry. That's
and occasionally show up on Jeopardy and harangue Alex Trebek. And Stephen Norrington just went, well, I mean, I made enough money off Blade. I'm okay.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I wish that Daltrey's kid would have got the message at Jackass.
It literally becomes kind of a Kenny Rogers-esque knowing when to fold him.
And some people knew when to run.
Yeah.
But, like, From Hell wasn't... Here's the thing, right? In a vacuum, let me ask this question. If these movies were made in a vacuum, right, the source material wasn't...
Well, for one thing, we wouldn't be able to hear the dialogue.
Oh, shut up. you know what I mean. If they were made without Alan Moore, like if John Byrne had written From Hell... would we be having the same conversation?
No, because I think most comic creators would fall into the category of being rather thrilled that something
right.
was adapted to the big screen.
Mark Millar is happy to blow anybody.
Oh, my God.
Like, no matter how bad it is, he will down their load.
In order to get his shit on screen.
Yeah. He's like, oh, won't it? It's great. It's awesome. And then you watch the movie and you're like, okay.
Somebody can mention the words nemesis in casual conversation. And he's like, somebody's making nemesis into a movie. No, they're not, Mark. Stop it. Nobody's making your crappy anti-Batman movie.
He thought Resident Evil Resident Evil Apocalypse.
Right.
He heard nemesis. He's like, oh, they're making me movie.
Like, no, just stop it. Stop it.
I hate to disillusion you, but...
Well, do you know the story behind that, right? He made this comic book called Nemesis, and it was like a 5-issue mini or a 4-issue mini. And it's what would Batman... His whole idea is, what would Batman do if he didn't have his moral? Like, okay, great. Now, so every friggin'... This has only been rehashed about 1,000 times,
yeah.
Mark. But we're going to go for it one more time because you've made Kick-Ass. All right, wonderful. And then immediately,
wasn't Kick-Ass that very story?
It pretty much was.
I was about to say, like that's
or skill. I mean, apparently all they added was just the skill level.
Well, and my thing with Mark Millar is that everything he writes is like, hey fans, screw you. You suck. You know, like, everything is like the evil fanboys.
Right, you like superheroes? Here's a book called The Boys about how awful superheroes are. You like Batman? Fuck you, you got the nemesis. Like, come on, man. Like, the shtick is
like,
old.
Like, was it Wanted? The comic is like,
I was about to mention Wanted.
Here's me sodomizing you. Ooh, at the end.
Well, it's like Wanted was it was all just building to this thing. You're like, you get however many issues are just solid.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to that last issue, and it's like, oh, by the way, I stopped giving a damn about this thing.
Mm-hmm. Well,
F you, by the way.
Can we talk about the fact that he basically was instrumental in the invention and the writing and the creation of the Ultimate Marvel Universe, where it's like, Captain America punches people in the face, and, you know, Hulk eats people, and, like, it's like, oh, extreme, like, oh, God, just stop.
Yeah, this
stop
is like,
it
was originally known as the Marvel Red Bull Universe.
Right, it was, and somebody flew in with a jetpack with wings and, like, dropped Red Bull on people.
That's
and then
right.
Flew through a flaming hoop, and it's like, just, you know, but yeah, so in are we going to have the same conversation about Alan Moore's work if it's not Alan Moore? You know, yeah. like is From Hell a bad movie? Is V for Vendetta a bad movie? And I think V for Vendetta is the only thing that's been put on screen by Alan Moore that he's actually, you know, appreciated.
Yeah,
really?
I think
yes.
In some way, I probably because the core message remained pure.
Well, it took a while to come around to it, and honestly, it took the Occupy movement donning the mask.
I think, yeah, that's probably the reason he can go back and say, okay, I will give my, you know, really light, like, you know, just brushing the ink pad and
right.
Just touching the stamp of approval to the paper enough where you could tell it was there, but it's not like a full, just, you know, hard slam, because it put the idea of,
it popularized
the Guy Fawkes mask.
A Catholic terrorist.
Right.
Yeah. It popularized the idea of taking something completely out of context and adopting it, you know, on the part of people who had no idea what the connotations were. And in a lot of ways, you know, to tie it in with comics, it becomes like in Starman,
mm-hmm.
the stuff
with
Ragdoll, where early into the series, Jack's wearing, often seen wearing the shirt that invokes the old Golden Age villain Ragdoll, who was one of the most innocuous, dull villains up to this point.
Right.
They then retconned him into being like this Charles Manson on steroids.
Super creepy,
type,
yeah.
Yeah, who commanded an entire legion of crazies to go out and do his bidding in a horror orgy of death and destruction.
God bless him.
That then led some of the Golden Age characters to kind of go all Ultimates Universe on
go
us.
All lynch mob on him. Go.
Yeah. And we shall never speak of this again, at least until the we have to admit it to our children.
Right. At least until Zatanna gets a hold of us and wipes our minds and makes us say things we don't want to say.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of that there that, you know, inadvertently this terrible machine that is Hollywood that takes and removes all of the good of Moore's work somehow accidentally
got something right.
Yeah, Occupy never would have adopted the Guy Fawkes mask solely from the comic.
No.
Because most of them never would have.
They're too busy overthrowing the ruling parlance to read a comic book. Are you kidding? It takes too much. It takes way too much work. You know, plus they maxed out Dad's credit card early on. So, but no, you're absolutely right. Because of the, you know, and that's sort of the, I love the fact that happened, and it's sort of Alan Moore's MO anyway, you know, is to subvert from the inside, and it worked. That's his proof of concept. It worked. Now, why can't anybody else get it? Get it right with my work. They got it right, and they didn't even mean to, like.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say I am a fan of Zack Snyder's Watchmen.
Okay.
I really like that film.
There's nothing wrong with that, and I'm actually a fan of it as well, but only up to a point. I think there were certain things that Snyder missed completely. And I don't know if it's I'm inclined to think it's strictly Snyder.
I think it is but I think Snyder, whether he knows it or not, sympathizes with certain elements in the story that Moore doesn't, and that's stuff like Rorschach. Like,
I will give you that. The problem is, and I don't know if you, being someone who is a self-professed non-comic book person who actually has a bunch of graphic novels.
I love that this is sticking. I love this is sticking. This is great. I love that this is sticking now.
I am just going to do what the good victim does and accept it.
All right. That's right. We're going to Helsinki you by the end of the day. So.
It's going to be a burning pyre.
You'll be begging to be on this show every chance you get.
There's going to be a burning pyre of collected novels out in his front yard because he's not worthy of owning them.
That's right. Dallas Mann Burns comic collection front yard, inexplicably, after. So, the biggest issue I have, if you have read Watchmen, and I understand that not everyone has read it several times a year like I do.
Right.
But the scene where Dan and Laurie are accosted by the Not-Tops in the alley.
Right.
Okay.
Is reduced from one of the more poignant scenes in the actual work because it's intertwined with the arrival of Dr. Manhattan at the television studio quite brilliantly. But that's one of those things that doesn't necessarily translate to the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that is fine. They did what they could with that. But the biggest problem was Snyder does what I call sexing up that scene.
Oh, well, yeah.
Hollywooding up that scene. And the problem that I have with that is, at the end of that scene in the comic, and I have gone on about this any time Watchmen comes up in the context of the movie, is that in the comic, you have this scene that acts as a reminder that, you know, even when they haven't been doing anything in forever, the old muscle memory is there. It's like riding a bike. They're never going to stop being able to kick a bunch of cheap punks' asses.
Right.
And they walk away with a bunch of bloodied and broken would-be assailants. And that's something you can walk away from. They attacked us. We repelled them. That they suffered injuries is their own fault. And their own, it's on them.
Mm-hmm.
What you cannot walk away from in good conscience is a guy with a knife in his neck that you put there, and another guy who is dead. And presumably the knife guy's dead, but the fact that you have very likely two corpses, one you use as a human shield. I mean, yes, aspects of this are on the Not-Tops, but can it undermines their characters when you have two former superheroes essentially walking away from a murder scene.
Right.
Just shrugging their shoulders and, oh, well, time to get going. There's dead people in the alley.
Oh, that's okay. Nobody's going to miss them.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where I think in the interest of having some kind of kick-ass scene.
Oh, yeah, well, it's because
there's this loss of, it's like they've stepped out of the characters that they were up to this point.
And well, in that movie, like, you know, people get punched, like, their face caves in. Like,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like,
they get 300 punched. They get straight 300 punched.
They get, like, when you hear a punch in that, like, what was it, when the first Night Owl was punching Tom Savini in the extended version, like, it's like, you hear, like, it sounds like their faces are breaking apart.
The Foley stage had a dearth of celery that day. Let's just say that.
Lots of celery. They punched a lot of apples into applesauce. I just, you know, it makes you really want to see Zack Snyder's Popeye in a way, but
yeah.
It would have, like, Popeye, like, screaming in the rain and, like, running
through
the
window. Oh, God. Lightning.
Yeah. I am what I am!
A lot of standing on roofs and shots pointed up. It would.
But we would still get the Harry Nilsson music.
Right.
Yeah, and it would probably be this Alan Moore-like vitriol coming out of Thimble Theater. So, yeah.
But, okay, so flip side to Watchmen, yeah. which we all agree Watchmen is at least a viable, and V for Vendetta are viable transcriptions. Like, okay, at least.
I mean, Zack Snyder, for all his faults, did at least make an attempt to film the unfilmable.
And it was obvious that he cares about the source material. You know, it was obvious that V for Vendetta, you know, that there was at least love for the source material. From Hell had the same thing. I really believe that they took this, you know, grimoire, as it were, because From Hell is a hefty volume if you
it
get
is.
Your hands on
it.
It is.
If I threw that book off of a balcony, it would kill someone.
But he's not a comic fan. He doesn't have it.
Yeah,
I do have it.
Oh, you however, do have however, it. However, oh, you
however,
have it.
However, I have not read it. So.
Oh, what the shit!
I know.
Like buys graphic novels at half price books.
Do you just buy the shells? Yeah, the shell of the book.
So you can look; they're sophisticated or geeky.
Yes, exactly. No, that's the one like Alan Moore thing I haven't read is From Hell. I've seen the movie, haven't read the book.
It's enjoyable. It really is. I'm not going to go as far as to say it's fun because of the source material, but it's enjoyable.
I can tell it's not fun by looking at it.
But they're all fairly as faithful to the source material as you can make them. Let's say that. You know, you could have gone a shot for shot on Watchmen. Would it have garnered the interest in the audience that it would have? Probably not. Cole and I would have seen it a lot more, but not a lot of other people would have.
And the thing, I will point out, I really, the director's cut, I could do without, because it Snyders it up even further.
Right, right.
Because it adds some things that are necessary, but there are too many that are unnecessary.
I like it even more. Love it.
But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of what it brought to the screen in its own way were necessary evils. You know, the approach was a necessary evil because, frankly, there's some of this stuff that just the squid thing just doesn't translate. It works well within the greater context of the story, and by the time you get there, you're okay with it. But I don't think you could have fed that to an audience and expected anyone to stay put.
Not at all.
And you know, I'm much more forgiving about that than 90%
I know
of the
people who said the movie sucked because there was no squid, and I think that's nuts. I was like,
to dismiss the entire film solely because one of the weakest links was
absent. Right.
I mean, conceptually, that was one of the weakest links.
They were like, "Well, it doesn't make any sense when comedian says it's a big joke, so it's terrible."
How is it not an even worse big joke? In fact, what they chose to do resonates far more, because there's actually a little line in Moore's work in the comic where when Ozymandias, at the end, you know, in declaring his victory and proving his concept, turns on the enviable wall of televisions that everyone wanted in the 80s.
Well, sure.
As well as an Antarctic retreat. I think we all wanted that. Well, I did. But, you know, you have little blurbs and bits and chunks of, you know, what is presumably all of the channels chattering away at once. And one of them, it played to me, if you read this, it'll probably ruin it for people who reread it, because when you read this line, I always read it in the voice of Dr. Carl Sagan in my mind, is that where there is like one little snippet where you can tell it's supposed to be some expert explaining what the hell this thing must be.
Yes.
And he's saying, you know, imagine, if you will, a psychic bee that stings reflexively upon death. And then the thing is, if that view were to have become popularized, it would have undermined all of his Veidt's work.
Right.
Because, okay, we accidentally let one bee into the house in a way that, you know, the chances of a honeybee getting into the bubble boy's bubble are so slim as to be non-existent. It took a series of events to make that happen once. Essentially, the whole thing hinged upon the concept that, we've opened the floodgates now, we've signaled to the other realms that Earth is ready for a higher form of war, call it what you will, you know, we now have to tread lightly.
Right.
But when you have a genuine perception that there's a threat out there that is conscious, that is a righteous indignation that can come out of nowhere and just sort of appear in the Houses of Parliament or in the Kremlin and say, do you know what nemesis means? Righteous act of retribution delivered by appropriate agent. Manifested in this case by a raging... Okay, anyway, but...
Wow.
You can go see you Snatch.
You want a callback? What's going on here?
Yeah, I want to play Bricktop in the remake of Snatch.
The bus and truck...
That's right. The off-Broadway Snatch.
I think you should play him Snatch. As John Huston, Cole.
Oh, wow.
Play him like
Houston. By the way, Cole, repeat
Peter Ustinov-esque.
repeat that line. Huh? Repeat that line again.
Oh, do you know?
No. The line from the book.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Carl Sagan line about the
yes. Repeat that line.
If you will, a giant psychic bee that stings reflexively upon death.
For two things. Number one, is there ever been a more Alan Moore line? Ever in existence than that line.
Wow, you know, I hadn't really thought about how decidedly...
That is the most Alan Moore-esque piece of literature I've ever heard. Secondly, of course he included that because in his mind, no one was going to get his art, and that's what they were going to be saying. That's the way he rationalized what would happen if this were to actually happen. Would be, this is the way it would be taken. Nobody would see it for what it is in actuality. So it isn't the making of his films the same thing as what he was saying there? Isn't that what he sees this as? You know, like they're taking whatever was going through Ozymandias' mind when he heard that is what goes through Alan Moore's mind whenever they say they're going to, you know, we're going to do, for instance. Has anybody ever got it more wrong on purpose? And I believe this to be true. This might be my conspiracy theory, but has anybody ever got it more wrong on purpose than Keanu Reeves' Constantine?
Oh, wow.
I
always saw Constantine as being sort of the epitome of not knowing what you had. It's like Hollywood and comic books were quite literally the dog chasing cars, but
yeah.
the dog occasionally caught a car, and once it caught one, it didn't know what to do with it. And I think that's the big struggle here, and I think that's why, you know, Alan Moore doesn't want this dog chasing his cars.
And Constantine felt like one of those comic book movies we got early on, where it's like, it felt like they were doing an adaptation, but just were taking ideas from the thing and just making, like, a TV pilot out of it.
Right, I can see. Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, Constantine, let's divorce that movie from the name. Let's divorce it from the DC Universe. Let's divorce it from Alan Moore.
Let's divorce it from the Holy Roman Empire.
That's a schism. There's a schism now.
Yeah, but I think if you take that movie and just what, you know, like in my case, precious little I remember from it, but whatever you recall from seeing that movie, if you take your recollections and remove anything other than, if it was a movie just about a character, you know, John Lemming or whatever,
right?
Would you have had as big a problem with it? That's the real problem there.
That movie could have been
a standalone movie, and no one would have cared.
It could have been the Jack Brooks Monster Slayer of the big screen.
The problem is that a lot of these adaptations, these comic book movies, are often just, let's use this name to sell this story that has nothing to do with the name.
Right, like it just, I don't know,
we want to sell this story, but we can't sell it. Nobody's going to go see this, but if we put a familiar name on it, then we can get an audience.
And Constantine, to me, the movie felt like every terrible, like, sort of religious fan fiction thing. Like, there's a detective, and he's damned to hell, but he's got to fight against Satan, and God's like a kid with an ant farm, man.
Isn't that it? Didn't you just describe End of Days?
Yeah, pretty much. Wow. No, it is like End of Days.
That's a good example, though. I mean, absent the name Constantine, this could have been End of Days.
It would have been just like a strange, like, 90s action movie. And when I say 90s action movie, I mean that's the type of movie you would get in the 90s.
Right. Yeah.
But it wouldn't have a brand. It would have an original, like, you know, name, and it wasn't based on anything. But then in the 2000s, they went, okay, well, we need to get Constantine. We need to get Hellblazer and put it on.
We need to get these names that have some familiarity because comics are king right now, and we need to jump in on that. Yeah, this could have been, you know, Hell's Detective.
Right, but
Hell's Detective.
But as soon as you start optioning,
I would have gone to see Hell's Detective
Satan.
But the book had to have been optioned, right? I mean, it had to have been optioned for this. There had Alan Moore is too much a narcissist, and I'm sorry, but it's true, because, you know, that's the thing, is he took, up until the point, and even during Watchmen, he took the money. He gave the money to Dave, he gave the mass majority of the money to Dave Gibbons, but he took the money.
Yeah. I think that goes back into where we were talking about in the last issue in I Am Legend, about that legendary status of Alan Moore. I think there's a lot of this that, okay, there was like something I saw about Weird Al Yankovic one time, and they were talking about one of his songs that was like, I can't remember which one it was, but apparently it was like, I think it was based on Gangster's Paradise.
Yes, the Coolio feud.
Yeah, and they had this interview with Coolio bitching about how he didn't give permission and all this stuff, and spouting off all this stuff about it. And I thought, okay, you can't sit there and tell me that in this day and age and think for a moment that Weird Al Yankovic's recording studio would have got behind anything that they didn't have an ironclad agreement about.
Right, he wasn't sitting
This isn't some fanboy recording stuff.
In his basement, and then released on YouTube, right?
Yeah, putting it out on Napster or something.
Wow, Napster, really?
Hey, I saw this thing a long time ago.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's bad. I saw it back
And you're trying. I'm not going to shame you.
What happened was that, like, Al had gotten permission from Coolio's management. Coolio was happy with the money he got, and then wanted to act like his song was art.
Self-serving to throw up this pretense. Like, hey, why don't we get Coolio on this movie? So he's going to use it as a vehicle for Coolio. And I think that a lot of the hatred of Hollywood is, you know, a lot of it's genuine. I think a lot of it, you're going to have that feeling like, you know, why do I bother if you're just going to take my good work and turn it into this crap? But the thing about it is, the people who saw and appreciate Alan Moore's work in its original form, there's only ever going to be a finite number of them. The people who saw and appreciate the movies based on his work will always only be a finite number.
Right.
But the thing about it is, they're discovering that work, and hopefully some of those who see the work will then seek out the original material and discover how much better it is. So in a way, it's the best possible commercial for something that, I mean, you know, okay, Watchmen hits the theaters. And DC...
Or Watchman, if you're Gene
Watchman,
Kelly.
Watchman, yeah.
Watchman!
Watchman was actually the movie about the guy that created the first wristwatches, because before that, everyone just carried pocket watches.
I thought Watchman was about a guy who peeped on dudes. And
actually, Watchman is the story of Butch Coolidge's father.
and my review for my Village Voice review for that movie opened with the line, "No one watches the Watchman." It was great.
Wow. But the thing about it is that these things ultimately become self-serving. So if Moore goes on the defensive or the offensive, if you will, it serves Alan Moore. I think there's a lot of the stuff that goes on out there. I really genuinely believe a lot of stuff is just simply, especially with such a narcissistic personality, what better way to serve your own ends than to add to controversy, you know, throw fuel on the fire of controversy?
Of course. I mean, it gets headlines.
Right.
Yeah.
When there's a movie out based on your work and you say, this movie is crap, it sucks, and screw everybody, and...
Well, it's like, okay, you're going to make Watchmen, I can't stop that. And you're going to give me money, well, I'm going to give it to charity. Because I don't care. Why am I giving it charity? Because at the back end, I'm going to make $500 million
Absolutely.
Of sales of Watchmen. Because, you know, Watchmen already sold over 2 decades. They sold literally in a month what they sold in two decades.
Which is interesting. So here's an interesting
trade
thing.
Trade paperback. So.
When Watchmen came out, when V for Vendetta came out, when From Hell came out, Alan Moore was all over. And Alan Moore does a thing where he doesn't go on TV, right? He will write an
TV
editorial.
Goes on him.
He will... Wow.
Chuck Norris-esque.
He prays to the serpent god Set, and
he's invented his own.
Actually invoked Set of the pantheon of the ancient Egyptians.
He just did it because he likes to think about James Earl Jones with that great hair.
I do.
Oh, wow.
But he'll write an editorial to the London Examiner or something and send that off. So they print it. Then it gets covered by the TV and the internet. God, I sounded like my dad. By the TV,
by the TV and the internet.
What happens is the TV gets its hands on this stuff, and it's all over.
And they get it on Napster. But that's a brilliant thing that he does. But here's what I'm realizing. And I've done a lot of research for this show, and I often find myself looking for stuff by Alan Moore anyway because I'm a freak. But what happens is, so in those three instances, he was all over the place.
Yeah,
you know, talking about how he's going to piss fire on things and how he hated it and no one should watch it. And it's an abortion of his vision and all of the whatever else he could come up with in his crazy, you know, Lovecraftian beard mind that he has. But for Constantine, nothing. I haven't found it where he his best.
Well, I think in that particular case,
well, his name's not on it, right?
Yeah,
but his name can't be on it.
He's probably appears somewhere as having created the character,
right?
But at that point, I mean, that character was sort of, he introduced and created the character, established the core concept, and other people ran away with it. So in a way, that was sort of a shared universe kind of thing. It was like, okay, I'll write you the best Joker story ever written, but I'm not going to bitch about the Joker being on screen.
But the thing about it is, why would it, to speak to your point, Cole, why would the movie was such an...
Why wouldn't he have used that as a vehicle?
But he wouldn't use it as a vehicle because it was so far afield and it was so widely panned where V for Vendetta, From Hell, and Watchmen were not.
These things serve him. I mean, he'll make like a dime off of anything Constantine for every $60 or $100 he gets off of Watchmen or From Hell.
Right.
So, am I going to go out and nickel and dime myself, or am I going to go after the big fish? And
why would anybody after going to a movie theater and seeing Constantine, and I'm being just as honest as I can be, why would I then go out and seek out the Constantine books?
Exactly. Especially because the Constantine stuff was under Hellblazer. So until the television series, you wouldn't even know what to look for.
Right, right.
Unless you knew to go, like, ask the guy at the comic shop. You know, what's this guy? Not that that would inspire you, unless it was some sort of weird 60s Batman syndrome where, sales on Batman spiked when people found out that, despite people finding out that the Batman they knew and loved from television, meanwhile in the comics was smashing people in the face with boat hooks. And,
right.
He was a rich guy beating up on the poor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing Alan Moore hates more than that.
But also, and the thing about
that's next issue, Hunter.
Yeah, I mean, Alan Moore was probably a young lad back then, but and developing his hatred.
Well, what do you think? What do you think defined his agency against?
That probably was
totalitarianism. It was Batman. It was the Batman 66 TV show.
I would argue that Alan Moore is a totalitarian, but
well, see, the thing about it is, in 1966, in comics, and other comics being in other media. That Batman's television series was to the actual comic incarnation what Teen Titans was to the actual Princess Coriander of Tamarin. Is you get the little 14-year-old girl who grows up and at 16 or 17 goes and buys a comic book and sees her favorite character Starfire as an abject sex object.
Right, right.
A libertine. And is shocked beyond all belief. And it's like, because no one is out there warning you, oh, by the way, nothing adapted is ever going to be precisely. And I'm sure that may have happened with people who saw Watchmen and thought, you know, in some ways this is a softer, more approachable, and in other ways it's frighteningly worse than what I saw on screen. So,
well, so as we're winding down the show, which we're doing because we're coming up on our hour.
Oh, we do that a lot.
I know. What about Swamp Thing? Because I think we all share a love of
Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing is easily the greatest movie based on anything Alan Moore's touched.
I would kind of agree with that statement, actually. I would.
Okay, as far as entertainment value, probably, but, you know, I don't know.
I don't know. I kind of agree with that statement.
I have the Scream Factory Blu-ray, and it's amazing. So,
well, I think what's interesting about Swamp Thing is it was, as far as comic book adaptations go, it got away with a lot because I don't think anybody really gave a shit what you did with Swamp Thing. You could do whatever you want. Like, I don't care. It's not going to affect Swamp Thing.
Put David Hess in there, okay.
But
God bless him.
But at the same time, I think part of it is that, you know, if I'm not mistaken, the Avco Embassy film may either predate Alan Moore's arrival on the title or certainly predate the kind of splash that his arrival on the title made.
Right.
In so much as, you know, you're not going to see a heavy influence, people just out there, you know, jumping on that sucker. And so it can get away with being a kind of no-brainer entertainer, as Catherine calls them. And it's a fun kind of movie. You've got Adrienne Barbeau.
Adrienne Barbeau and her incredible cleavage.
God.
Yes, indeed.
Bless her Barbeau bots.
Yes.
Oh, I know. I
forever envy John Carpenter just because he was with her for a while. Just saying.
For a long while.
Yeah, a long while.
Yeah, but then, apparently
it's due.
Apparently he told her to do this movie because it was directed by Wes Craven. And he was like, she was like, I've got this script. And he was like, oh, Craven's doing it. You should do it.
So after, so I looked it up.
What else
he started after.
As an ex-stripper?
He started after the movie. So he did not influence the first movie. But definitely the second movie.
Yes, and I think that is one of two reasons.
Which has its own hot girl pedigree in that Heather Locklear was in that one, if I'm not mistaken. Am I not mistaken?
Heather Locklear, the Beastmaster. For those of you familiar with Free Enterprise.
Oh, yes. We need to have a whole show on Free Enterprise.
Oh, I hate that movie.
Oh, God damn it.
What's wrong with you?
No. No.
Oh.
No. No. I don't like you anymore.
Guess who's not going to get invited back?
God.
Were you channeling Napoleon Dynamite there?
Don't cry, Caesar.
God!
I don't even know what to say. My throat and my anus was locked up at the same time.
Dumbstruck there that such a thing could be said.
Although I have recommended it to people. I found copies at Movie Trading Company and recommended it to people because I figured they would probably get a kick out of it. Not because but I was just, I don't know.
Shut up, Himmler.
Himmler? Are you calling me a Nazi?
Yeah, a Nazi propagandist at that. I always...
But, I don't know. That I had a reaction to that movie, that's all.
But I think, though, that you can look at that as being, you know, the official story is, of course, that like home video rentals and such.
Yes.
Inspire Avco Embassy's like, oh, this thing is a piece of crap. We wasted our money. We can at least make something on the back end through the home video market. And apparently, you know, it's like huge on home video and on video services of the day prior to cable. There was, you know, it was one of the most viewed things on TV.
Right.
And maybe the Z Channel for all we know. But, you know, that inspired them to say, okay, I guess there is a market for this. And you do see some influence of Moore's take on Swamp Thing there.
Yes.
Not much, but you do see some. And then you also have this sort of almost, you know, pre-Joss Whedon-y little humor injected here and there, but I think even the original had some little, you know, Louis Jourdan is Anton Arcane. You got no complaints.
Benedict
Cumberbatch. I want to watch that movie again. I want to watch it now, like right now.
It was a great movie. It really was a good, like, it is. I honestly don't have any complaints about Return of the Swamp Thing. Like, none. Like, I can't think of one.
It's just so much fun. And I think in a lot of ways you do see the Swamp Thing character coming more of its own.
Oh, very much so.
Than it was allowed to be in the original.
Oh, very, very much so.
And
huge player.
I kid you not, in a strange way, I keep having that silly little line pop in my head incessantly where he draws himself through the sewer system,
yeah,
up into the house via the bathtub, which is a very more inspired approach to the character. You wouldn't have seen him become, you know, dissolute like that and reanimate himself elsewhere in the original. I just love the line where, you know, she's asking how he got in there. You might say, oh, it was piped in. Which is a term that, you know, millennials don't even know what the hell that means.
They do not.
They would literally, they would quite frankly take that literally. Oh, yeah, well, of course you were piped in. You came in through the
piped in,
pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why
would that even be an issue?
No, why would that? Yeah.
Yeah.
walk through the pipe from Alaska.
Yeah.
All right, so last question.
All right.
I don't know if Hunter will be able to answer it because he's a professed not non-comic book fan. But
yeah, one more in there.
He's got to get it in. If there was a storyline that hasn't been done, or a book or an arc that would be able, that you, what would you like to see translated?
I would like to see.
Oh, he's coming with it. All right,
his females in literature, porn, comics that he does with his wife. That's what I would like to see.
Okay,
I'll let the Lost Girls,
whatever the hell that is. I'm just kidding.
Talking about from hell.
Yeah, I know. No, I would not want to see that. But
thank you for helping me answer the question.
Yeah.
I was in a bit of a loss there for a moment.
Yeah, you were like, what? Oh, no, I don't know. I don't know which one I would do because I can't think of any. I would want like a. I know League of Extraordinary Gentlemen's been done, but it really hasn't.
Correct.
Because it was in name only. So what I'd like to see is like a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen like TV show or
like
something.
Like a Netflix thing or an HBO thing.
Yes,
exactly.
There we go.
Exactly. That's what I want.
That. Yeah. Especially if you could do kind of what Moore had done over the years after. There was a second League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which I just could not get into.
Right.
And then I finally went back and I was like, okay, wow, that's actually not only very good, but it's very more. And apparently after that, there was a lot. There's like been a whole series of later incarnations. Like there's like they did one where it's like in the '60s. I'm not familiar enough with '60s literature to
to lock it in.
Yeah, to know exactly, who all might be in that, but. You know, and I've seen, you know, people fancifully putting together their own groups, and you also see within the context. And that was one thing that is just very vaguely suggested on screen that I felt like they really missed out on was the pedigree of the League.
Right.
Because there's so much implicit history in the comic to the point where there's actually a portrait hanging on the wall of a previous incarnation of the League that, you know, goes back to literary characters of a half century or more prior, including Fanny Hill and the Reverend Dr. Sin, who I actually had to look that up. And that was one of the things. It was very much a thinking man's,
yes, agreed,
book. It forced you to go and like look this stuff up or discover for the first time that Captain Nemo in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was not James Mason. You know, it was he was more like the guy from Big Bang Theory.
Right. Okay, good.
You know, Disney audiences weren't prepared. It would be another half century before Disney audiences prepared for anyone of Arabic origin in a Disney film.
Right, and then we got to, you know, have white guy voices. So
yeah.
So Cole, what about you?
The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, a redo, if you will, is a brilliant idea, and something that needs to happen in my world.
Yes.
I would love to see, and I think to some degree a lot of Moore's stuff has been adapted in the animated DCU. We talked before about how Mogo Doesn't Socialize.
Yeah, translates very well.
Was adapted. You know, I'm hard-pressed because almost anything that I personally enjoyed has been at least attempted.
Okay.
With the exception of Top Ten, but I think Top Ten is so amazingly high concept. It would be impossible to sell on the big screen.
I agree. That's why I think that is another one.
That's the reason it needs to be made.
I think that's another one that would benefit greatly from a Netflix or an HBO or a Showtime series.
The other thing with that one is, like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, all of the implicit background. And in fact, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is replete with that sort of thing as well. Where there's like these little bits and pieces of stuff that you don't see, like handbills and stuff that set
right.
the stage. And, you know, that's decidedly absent.
Right. It would be tough.
Little design elements and things like that, because, I mean, the real joy of Top Ten beyond the story, or stories, actually,
yes.
Was the fact that you you had so much going on in the background, all these little nods and subtle jokes and such.
I agree. All right. Well, guys, I do we have any final thoughts on this?
I need to read Top Ten.
No, you do.
Yes, you absolutely do.
Well, I mean, if you read comics.
Yeah, if I read them. I mean, I like the idea of comics.
I understand
I you're
trying to be like Banky Edwards and be like, no, lady, comics are for kids.
You gotta roll them up and put them in your back pocket. Don't bag them and board them. What's wrong with you?
All right. Well, we're gonna wrap it up. Hunter, thank you. You've been awesome, as you always are.
Absolutely.
So,
even
oh, thank you. I feel like I didn't have much to bring to this one.
Oh, you brought it. You brought it. You brought it as you always do, my friend. Where can people find you? How do people get you? What's going on with you?
MidnightMovieCowboys.com. is where you can find my podcast, Midnight Movie Cowboys. You can find us on Facebook. Just look up Midnight Movie Cowboys. We have a page. We have a group.
And as this is a comic book show, be sure and check out the Midnight Movie Cowboys episode about Avengers Age of Ultron, which was...
Oh, yes. Jedi Cole was just on our Age of Ultron episode, which is our latest episode, although I called it Age of Ultron.
Which I was thinking maybe he was listening to our show.
Right.
Ultron Cafe. It's a new album, Age of Us.
And Andrew was right. Stu really hated it, and I didn't like it. So, Age of Ultron.
I can smell it in the wind. This is like a Scorpion song.
And that movie farted, and you smelled it and assessed.
I said, take me in the magic of the moment of Glory Night, and nothing for the Scorpions. Y'all are assholes.
Yeah.
Y'all are assholes. All right, Cole, will you plug us up, buddy?
Absolutely. We're, of course, coming to you through the channels, the various myriad labyrinthine
the
nature of
capillary
the Jedi Cole universe.
Nature. Yeah.
That's right. At JediCole.com, you can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can join our Twitter feed at which is under @TheJediColeU. We are on the verge of actually, finally, as promised, adding some video content to the YouTube channel.
We are.
The Jedi Cole Universe YouTube channel is about to have some smashing stuff from back on Free Comic Book Day, including, I suspect, the strangely amazing What's Your Favorite?
Yeah, I'm still cutting that together because there's a lot of it. There's a lot of it, and there's a lot that needs to be edited.
Yeah, that will make some sense later.
Still waiting on Master Drink Theater to get cut together.
Shut up, Hunter!
And, of course, the Jedi Cole Universe will be appearing in June.
We will.
at the Texas Comic Fest, which is in Lewisville, Texas. And that is, sadly,
I think it's the 13th.
I think it's second weekend, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's the 13th.
Yeah, it's a Saturday only in Lewisville. We'll have a booth there, and of course, Eddie Medina will have his own booth. He and Thomas Branch, you've been on. Eddie's, of course, my co-host on Rancor Pit. And Thomas has been on many a show. In the capacity of artists, we'll be out there. You can find out about that and many upcoming shows this year and next, including next year. We once the 2016 listings get in, little shout out to Danae, our good friend from Lubbock Con.
That's right.
Lubbock, Texas will appear in the 2016 listings when they begin late in the year. But yes, in June, if you happen to be heading out that way, out Lewisville way, that is the 13th, you are correct.
Down Lewisville way.
Trailers for sailor rent.
The North Texas Comic Book Show, I think, is coming up. The next one is on July 18th, which I just highly recommend that one. It's a great show they put on over there. And, of course, you can find as many of us as I can muster at my own. The Jellicle Universe is hosting its first comic toy and collectible swap meet on August 22nd in Arlington, Texas. But you can find out about these in every convention in the state of Texas that I'm aware of at Convention Warriors Projects Texas at cap-tx.info.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you guys again. We got one more show in this arc. We're going to be going over the magical, political, and
we are going to delve deeper and deeper and deeper.
Makes my stomach hurt.
For
shamanistic nature.
Yeah, we're going to get into some of the darker aspects, some of the grittier, nastier, don't tell your parents aspects of Alan Moore, and take a kind of an in-depth look at the rapey nature.
It's about time we really got in all up in rapey nature.
If you've been wondering why we have sort of glossed over that aspect.
Because we're dedicating an hour to forced sexual advances. Yay!
Gross.
Strange depravity.
Trigger warning.
Even the Dark Brothers blanched at some of the things that
we're about to talk about. So,
no love for porn peddlers, the Dark Brothers.
Only you, Cole.
Only me, yeah.
So, all right. So, in closing, buy, collect, and enjoy your comics, even if you're driven to find out what they're actually about because you went and saw a crappy movie and you want to know the actual source material. All right, say goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
And join us next week where we discuss the shamanistic rapey nature of Alan Moore. God, I can't.
There's going to be so much rape.
There's going to be all the rape. All right, good night, everybody. Thank you.